Okay, prayer. The guru. Well, to many people that word is a kind of a joke. You think of some funny guy. Posing as some great spiritual authority. Now, I just read the other day about when Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada was about to leave this world, the founder of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, and how mystifying it was to many how he wanted the succession to continue after him. Who shall be guru now? And of course, that is generally the most difficult time for any spiritual movement, when the founder, the obvious spiritual leader, leaves. But one thing that caught my interest there was something that he apparently said or indicated in his writings. I have to look that up. Well, the guru is generally supposed to be what they call an uttama adhikari, meaning of a person who is just above the influence of any ignorance and illusion that we others are splashing around in. Well, there are three different stages like that of transcendentalists described in the Indian Vedic literature: the Kanishta Adhikari, and the Madhyama Adhikari, and the Uttama Adhikari. So Kanishta is a beginner, someone who takes up spiritual life, but, well, is a neophyte, doesn't know very much, is not very learned, maybe not very convinced, even still doubts and tendency still to just try to crawl out of the thick swamp of illusion that we come from here. And then you have the Madhyama, that's the person who has crawled out of it, most of it, and who's like in between, you could say mid-level transcendentalist, who is fairly learned, who has transcendental knowledge, but it's not completely freed yet, who's on his way. Now, a guru, Prabhupada describes, as far as I saw, should be an uttamadhikari or an acharya. I mean, there is this word acharya meaning a real significant spiritual leader like that. But then when his disciples asked him in his last days, who's going to become guru now? He kind of indicated that none of you is really qualified. None of you is an uttamadhika, which is kind of totally obvious. Most of them were in their 20s or just above the 30s. Western kids who had been trained up for like 5-10 years or so. But you can become qualified. So he kind of left it open like that. And my understanding was that, yeah, you know, as so some people here and there, some devotees here and there start to become qualified, I mean, for real, that will be noticed by others who may then want to become their students and so on. So what I understood there is that even a Madhyama Adhikari, someone who is like struggling but is fairly advanced, so to speak, on the path, can be guru in the sense, which of course makes sense, can help neophytes to come to his or her platform or level, of course. So my understanding is that this is how Prabhupada saw it, that, well, I mean, just be yourself, just be real. When you are able to teach and you know the philosophy well and you know how to what bhakti yoga is about and you know who Krishna is, and then you can teach others like that, and you can teach them to do what you have done and get to that level. So that's guru. Now, I think most followers of Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada now would agree that his disciples then, some of them, the leaders, made a terrible mistake. I mean, it was a misunderstanding, but it really turned out fairly disastrous, I would say. They didn't really understand this. They thought that a guru must be an uttama adhikari, the perfect, super-duper, pure, transcendentalist devotee, freed from all imperfections. I mean, like that. Otherwise, it's not a real guru, right? So then, they appointed, or, well, basically, they appointed themselves in that sense, a group of people to become gurus like that. And I can understand that they saw the necessity for some to follow and take over after Prabhupada left. But then they stepped into this with that demand and expectation that now you are an uttamadhikari, you have to be an uttamadhikari for you. But then it became strange because they weren't. So what do you do then? Well, you have to play the role of an uttamadhikari for the disciples, because they need that. They need that perfect automatically, that guru. Otherwise, they don't have guru. Everything is just finished. That's how they thought. Now, just imagine yourself if you are somewhere there. You are what you are. You have learned something. You have done some good service to Krishna. You have something that you can share and help neophytes to learn. Now that's you. That's the real you. But then you have to act towards your disciples, your student, as if you were an absolute authority, absolutely right, as if there was no shortcomings, no weaknesses, no illusion, nothing like that. In other words, as an uttamadhikari. Of course that becomes wrong, because you can't just pretend such a thing. Now, and that's why everything went really, bad. And the Krishna consciousness movement is still today suffering from that, trying to sort things out, because although those 11 so-called appointed acharyas, we call them even, uttamadhikari, perfect souls, proved beyond any doubt that they weren't, and they fell off and they fell down and they just messed up, it was quite evident that no, this doesn't work. Still today, you find, at least it seems to me, that kind of role there that has to be played, that the gurus that are now existing, okay, they may not be called acharyas, they may not be worshipped with that extreme grandeur that was going on in the past. But still, the disciples learn that the guru is perfect, is absolute truth, absolute knowledge, infallible. I think it seems like that doctrine is still upheld. And if you would just suggest to a disciple or someone that there may be something, some weakness, ordinary human weakness in their guru, they will get angry like anything at you. And maybe, probably even some who hear this would think that this guy is relativizing the guru, that this is that expression. You dare to say that the guru can be wrong. Well, a Madhyamadhikari guru can be wrong, has weaknesses, is fallible. That's the definition of Madhyamadhikari. They can fall off, they can have problems and they can slip into that illusion a bit. So I think really, this is a crucial point there, because once we accept that, yes, this is my guru, he's very learned, he's very good devotee, but he's the way he is. There's no pretentiousness there. Then things are getting real. And although some may say that, but there's a need for that absolute authority thing. So let's just pretend. It doesn't work. I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement when I was 22, and now I'm 67. And I can just tell everyone who's young still that, I mean, one of my main realizations is how thick and heavy and strong that illusion of Maya is. How subtle. And how easily we just slip a little bit into that again. Oh, forgetting Krishna. Oh, here comes this old conditioning again here. Another illusion, another dream here. And, I mean, Maya is formidable. So now if we need to just pretend to be above that while not actually being, which is nothing to be ashamed of, then this is dangerous. And that's exactly what happened, that those who pretended like that, and they even started believing it themselves, that they were above all this Maya, above the weaknesses of falling into any kind of illusion anymore. But they weren't, so they just slipped right into it and didn't even notice it themselves, or you can rationalize things in incredible ways. I mean, we humans are good at that. So I really think that the welfare of this Krishna Conscious Movement, and I would say every spiritual movement, depends on that. It first of all depends on honesty, truthfulness. This is a Brahminical quality, not pretending to be something you're not. We have seen so many big priests and so-called spiritual leaders and gurus who pretend, who play it as a role, as a representative of God who knows it all, who has all the answers, either because they think it is required for the welfare of their constituents or disciples, or because they actually think they are like that. Just plain old narcissism. And all those weaknesses like narcissism or this or that, or the tendency to fall in illusion, that's what it's about. That's why we are here. And that's the struggle we are going through to get out of that. Now, how do you get out of that? I would say you can chant a lot of mantras, you can learn a lot of philosophy, you can work hard. And dress the right way, behave the right way, and all that. But that in itself doesn't really ensure that you are above that illusion or the influence of that illusion. The only thing that really can lift us up from this ocean of illusions that, you know, like the dream realm that always tends to tell us it's for real, is when we connect to Krishna. We depend on Krishna, we depend on God, and we just take shelter of God like little helpless children. Please, please help me to not get lost in my dreams and desires and illusions anymore, but just see that everything is you. You are here, you are reality, and please let me see that always. Have that in my life, that yeah, I'm just a part of Krishna, this is all Krishna, but it just looks like something else. And of course, that's the essence of the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharmam Parityajau, and so on. So, you ask me, I prefer, if you need to use the word guru or teacher, such a person who is just honest, for real. Yes, I'm going through this, I am praying like that myself. I am definitely fallible, I definitely also have the tendency to slip into these illusions and fall for them. But I am praying to Krishna, and I am trying to serve Krishna, I'm trying to be Krishna conscious, and chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, whatever mantra or prayer, for that purpose, to fix and focus my consciousness and mind on Krishna as the only reality. And yes, it works. Look at me, it even works for me. That is a humble, real devotee. And of course, someone in the position of a guru, a teacher to the students, has to be the most real and humble and no-nonsense, non-pretentious. And I would even say, I mean, skip that whole word, guru this, guru that. We need just teachers and students, and we help each other. I mean, I'm not saying that this has to be done, but I mean, at least as a thought experiment, just peel off all these superficial titles and costumes and all that, which is what makes it. It's part of that pretending, as some call it, cosplay, even. Then this movement can really start to flourish the way it should. That's my conviction.